This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been online now for more than a decade, writing about the digital signage industry and filtering all the BS. Now 69 is also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to get the RSS feed. 69 is sponsored and gratefully supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Integrated Systems Europe is coming up at the start of next month in Amsterdam, and Mike Blackman is the guy who has built ISE up to be the largest pro AV show on the planet. It's also the biggest digital signage show in terms of footprint and exhibitors, though signage is just one element of the event. Any show that's just weeks out is in crazy busy mode, but Mike took some time recently to talk about the show's roots, how it's grown, and how it works. We talk about what to expect this year, how to plan out a visit, and how to navigate and survive a show that will likely pull more than 65,000 people and span across 14 buildings. The good news, if you're now thinking about going, is that there are still hotel rooms available, and there's a lot of different ways to get to Amsterdam. Mike, thank you for joining us. Could you, for people who've not been to ISE, just give an overview of what it is and where it came from, all that good stuff.
Absolutely, Dave. I mean, firstly, just to claim my bold statement now, ISE is the largest AV show in the world. It was started almost 15 years ago. So we did the first show in 2004 in Geneva. And it was an idea that came about from CEDIA, Infocom International, and NECA in those days to do a combined show for the industry in Europe. They approached me to come and set it up and do it, and I gladly took on the challenge, and been one of the best things I've ever did. And we built this show up over the years. As I say, the first show was in 2004 in Geneva. We then moved in 2005 to Amsterdam. 2006, we went to Brussels. In 2007, we came back to Amsterdam and have maintained that as our home for the last few years. The first show in Geneva was actually, we had, I think it was 120 exhibitors on 3,500 square meters of space. Sorry, 2,800 square meters of space and 3,500 attendees. We are now over almost 1,200 exhibitors, 47,000 net square meters of space. And last year, we had over 65,000 business-to-business trade attendees from all over the world. Obviously, primarily these people are European. About 80% of our attendance is European, but we're getting more and more people coming from the rest of the world who, you know, have heard about the show and find it's a good place to do business.
People like me, I'd heard about ISE for many years, and I have industry contacts who'd ask me every year, "You come to ISE?" And I said, "Well, no." And I finally went last year. It was amazing. I couldn't believe how large it was, and not only in terms of the numbers of people, but the size of the facility and the maze that is the Amsterdam RIA. Pretty amazing show. And do you anticipate even more people for 2017?
Definitely. We've been looking at we do internally. We look at the numbers. We look at the day-to-day registration coming in. And all signs are pointing towards, you know, a substantial increase in attendance for this year as well. So, you know, we're quite positive. The signals look good that we will increase again.
And what's behind that? Why are so many people coming? Why is it growing in the way it is?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. The first is that the industry wanted a show like this. It was very clear. They got very much behind it. It was focused on the, you know, on the AV business. And as they wanted it to happen. And I think there's a difference. We're owned. So Integrated Systems Events, which is the organizing company, is owned by CEDIA and Infocom International. Mm-hmm. So it's a joint venture between the two companies. NSCA is no longer part of the partnership. And being industry associations who, that, you know, there are no private people who are getting money out of this. It's all going back into the AV industry. Now, the result is that it means that we're more concerned about delivering a good show than making money. Mm-hmm. And that was quite, very, very relevant at the very beginning to make the right investment to get the right people there. And the industry has really got on board and supported this event. We have advisory bodies and groups within our organization made up of industry people, so from all aspects of the industry, who sit with us and talk about what we should be targeting, what should we be aiming for, who are the people they need to see, what are the new directions that we need to pay attention to. These sort of things, they give input. So it's not just, you know, we myself, my team, we are experts in organizing trade shows. We are not AV experts. So it's good to talk to the marketing people within the major and small AV companies, whether it's a manufacturer or a distributor or an integrator, who give us feedback as to what they want to see or who they want to meet.
Mm-hmm. And what's evolved through the years? I'm sure the first one you did, footprint and crowd size is one thing, but I suspect the approach was different than what it is now.
Well, the approach hasn't been different. What we have done, and I would say our nomenclature, the focus of the type of companies we wanted in this show has not changed very much. It has expanded, and there's some areas that have always been in there that we're more successful in achieving now than we did when we talk about exhibitors. What I can say is the very first ISE, we had very few display manufacturers. We had the nuts and bolts people, you know, the core, you know, companies like Crestron and AMX, et cetera, participating. But we only had one or two display companies in those days. Now, I think every manufacturer of displays, whether it be projection or LED or whatever, are participating at ISE. The second thing that's happened is that those companies have actually changed their R&D cycles to actually do product launches in the first part of the year, which fits them extremely well. And that was part of the process of actually deciding on the time of year and when we did this show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we created a platform where they can present to the industry what's new.
And does it follow on at all from stuff that gets debuted this week in CES?
Absolutely. I think trends get debuted. So especially in display, you may not see the professional displays that you see at ISE at CES, but you may certainly see the trends, which, you know, the consumers are leading trends. When 4K or first HD and then Ultra HD, et cetera, all these trends start to be debuted in the consumer marketplace. And then coming to professional marketplace as well. So we see a lot of situations where products are being debuted at CES, and then we see the professional versions a couple of weeks later at ISE. And sometimes they actually show stuff behind closed doors at CES, which is more focused on the professional area.
Right, in the whisper rooms and those
exactly.
Certain places, right?
Yeah. What I'm hearing more and more as well is that a lot of distributors and integrators on the higher end are actually looking towards those trends to actually say, well, okay, what do they need to take note of?
Right. So if I'm a North American, Canadian, U.S., I've gone to Infocom. What would distinguish this from Infocom, and what would you tell somebody who said, well, I'm going to go to Infocom in Orlando in June. Do I really need to go to ISE?
Well, I would say yes to both, because firstly, I mean, for us, Infocom is our mother event, and you know, a lot of leading things. We would not exist if it wasn't for Infocom. Mm-hmm. And what you will see at ISE, you'll see what you see at Infocom plus more. So if you look at the US and European markets, in the US, it's a clear definition between the residential and commercial markets. You know, there are integrators who do the commercial business, and there are integrators and installers who do the residential business in the US. In Europe, it's slightly different. The residential markets in Europe are not as big as those in the US for AV. So the result is that the more successful integrators or those who are more successful in the residential market are doing commercial as well. There's a slight difference for the UK, but for the rest of Europe, it's certainly the case.
Right.
And you know, this comes off that an integrator will go into a business to actually do a major project for them, and it could be senior personnel or the MD or CEO says, well, actually, I want to do something with my house. Will you come and give me some advice here? And they're picking up business in that way. So you'll see in Central Europe, more and more of the residential business is carried out by commercial, you know, people who are doing commercial and residential installation. As such, it makes more sense to have a show that covers both sides for the European market, rather than having one for commercial and one for residential, as you do in the US. That's the difference. And there's a big overlap.
Right. And you'd mentioned it's like Infocom plus more. What are the plus more things? It's like the home automation people and so on?
Exactly, yeah. So, and, you know, again, we're not talking exactly CES here. We're talking custom installers. So this is the CEDIA show that takes place in next year in San Diego. And this is, ISE is a combination of both events.
Okay. You bounced around a little bit. You were in Geneva and you tried Brussels, but you've kind of settled in on Amsterdam. What is it about Amsterdam that has made you kind of settle in on that?
Well, you know, we were looking for a location that was easy to get to, quite cosmopolitan, and, you know, easy for people to actually find accommodation at reasonable prices. Geneva was a nice place to launch, but we found issues because, you know, Switzerland is in Europe, but it's not. I.e., it's, you know, it's part of the European landmass, but it's not in the European economic region. Mm-hmm. And that meant that a lot of exhibitors who are European-based suddenly had to import and export their products. They weren't used to that. And that became a bit of a hindrance for us. It was also quite expensive as well. We then went to Amsterdam, which as a location, and again, this was something we did. We went to the industry and we said, look, okay, you know, we had a show that worked to some extent. Everybody said they wanted it to happen again, but they needed somewhere that was easier to work in. The result was we went out, we gave a short list. We held a meeting straight after the show in Geneva, and we invited all the exhibitors to participate in that show, in that meeting, and give us their opinions. And the result of that meeting was that everybody said they wanted this show to happen again. So this was January 2004. But they wanted a different location. And we went through a list of cities in Europe that we felt would work. We came down to a short list of three cities. Amsterdam was one of those. And we went out and did our homework and looked to see where it would work, what was available. And Amsterdam came up tops as part of that. So we moved to Amsterdam in 2005. We couldn't get a tenancy in 2006 in Amsterdam, so we moved the show to Brussels. But at the same time, we secured the 2007 tenancy back in Amsterdam because of its advantages. The first was that you can actually get flights to almost 300 different destinations every day directly to Amsterdam without having to change. And that's a critical factor in actually running an international show, you know, the possibility to travel there easily. The second thing we did is we negotiated with the city to make sure that they try to keep hotel prices down to make it affordable long term. We didn't want it to, the situation. And when we went to Amsterdam in 2005, you know, we went there, we actually got, I think, 8,000 attendees that year, which was quite small. And we didn't want the hotels to start hiking their prices when they started getting full. So, you know, we made a long term arrangement, and the result is that when we compare to other large shows in Amsterdam, the hotel costs at ISE are quite cheap. So, you know, these are some of the factors that actually bring it there, making it affordable and accessible. The Rye, you know, we are pushing the edges of the Rye, but they are also finding opportunities for us to expand the show. We are the second largest event in the facility now. And I think we are now the largest attended business-to-business show in Amsterdam. Hmm. So we bring quite a lot to the city as well. And the city is doing a lot to try and make sure that they help keep that going.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you mentioned you're pushing the edges. You're in, what, 12 halls at?
14.
14.
14. 14. So, and, you know, they've built another hall, which we're debuting this year. We're also putting in temporary structures this year. And in 2018, you know, we anticipate putting in even larger temporary structures. So we still have more space to grow into. And, you know, we're also talking with the Rye and the city about expansion and, you know, how we manage expansion.
Are there any risks of the show getting too large and encompassing? Like, I was looking at CES, and I've been to CES, and I thought about going this year, but it's so big, and there's so much, pardon the expression, stupid crap that you have to weed through to see the good stuff, that I just decided I don't want to do that. And is it tempting at all to, you know, CES now has a lot of automotive in it. It has a lot of other elements to it that, you know, do they really apply to consumer electronics?
Well, I think it does, because the automotive industry is moving closer and closer to, when you look at what Tesla's has done and what BMW and Chrysler and all these companies, where they're moving towards, you see the interaction. I noticed the other day, I have a BMW, and I use an app on my iPhone where I can actually, it doesn't matter where, I can sit here, or I could be in Amsterdam today and my car's at Munich Airport, and so I can actually say, okay, please, I forgot to, I parked my car outside, it's snowing, and we really do have a blizzard now. Can you please warm my car at this time when I land? And I can do that via an app on my phone. Then I suddenly noticed that they have an interface for the Amazon Alexa. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, that's showing the consumer devices being interfaced and interacting with automotive. So I understand why they're doing that. Do we go in that direction? No, we don't. But I think we have to look and say, okay, what is relevant to our industry? And if it's relevant and something where an integrator can make his business or enhance his business and give that little bit extra, then we should include it. That should be the criteria.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now back to the podcast.
Are the display companies your largest footprint exhibitors now?
The display companies, I mean, Samsung is our largest footprint, followed by LG, but then we have companies like Crestron, mm-hmm. and obviously Harman, AMX, who are not display companies, but certainly the display companies take collectively the most space, but they're not, you know, we have a lot of large footprint non-display companies in there.
Right. Let's talk digital signage. When you started the show and as it's grown, was digital signage always a notable component of it, or is this something that's kind of grown up?
It's grown up. In the first show in Geneva, we did not consider, you know, digital signage was in our, you know, in our list of elements, but we didn't see it as a significant part. In 2005 in Amsterdam, we looked at this as a form of wayfinding for I go back a step. I have this philosophy of, if I'm running a show, we should actually use the technology as part of what we're doing. And I go back to a criticism I got something like 25 years ago. I ran a show in London for the DEC computer market. And one day, one of our attendees came up to my office, and my assistant came and said, there's someone here to see you. And I said, who is it? He said, it was an attendee, but he'd like to talk to you. And so I said, okay. And the guy came in the door and he said, is this a computer show? And before I you know, said, are you stupid or what? I thought, there's something behind this. So I said, yes, but why are you asking? And he said, well, I just came in the show downstairs and you registered me with a typewriter, and it wasn't even electronic. And it hit home for me, mm-hmm. thinking the guy had a very significant point. There we were running a computer show and we were registering people with typewriters rather than using computers. So I came to the point saying, well, okay, if we're doing a show about AV, then we should be using audiovisual technology where it's relevant. If there are solutions available for what we're doing, then we should be using them and actually profiling it. So as such, I said, well, look, we have so much paper signage here around the show, telling people what's going on, showing them where to go, etc. We should actually be doing this ourselves. And Sony was one of our biggest exhibitors in 2005, and we talked with them, and they were just launching their own digital signage system. So we worked with them to actually create a show floor system that worked. It was rudimentary. It worked quite well, though, and it just pushed us in that direction. So the following year, we started to look and say, okay, what else do we need to do here? We need to give people advice, and we started running a series of conferences. And the result was that digital signage grew within the show from 2005 onwards. now we probably have the largest digital presence of digital signage exhibitors than any other show worldwide, including those which are just dedicated to digital signage. We have one hall, Hall 8, which alone in its own right is bigger than any other digital signage show in the world. And that hall is dedicated to digital signage. In total, we have almost 500 exhibitors showing products, services, or solutions related to digital signage.
And a lot of these exhibitors, looking down that list, are ones that do not attend or do not exhibit at shows in North America.
That's correct.
And I saw companies all the way from Korea showing up there.
We have really put ourselves in the position where those companies come to us and they see the platform, they see it works, they're doing business.
And let's talk about the attendees. Is it primary? Well, I guess it's safe to assume it's primarily European, but you're pulling people from all over the place as well, right?
Yes, we are. I would say about 80% of our attendees are from Europe. And, you know, our focus is to be a European show. Now, I suspect most of those people who are coming from outside of Europe are there primarily to source new products or to actually look to find partners in Europe. But we're finding, you know, quite a few distributors or integrators coming from other regions, particularly Middle East, who are coming to the show and actually looking to actually find the right partners. You know, my advice always is that if you're in North America, then the Infocom show in June is your best solution to find, you know, the right products and services. But we're at a different time of the year. There are products which are or new things which are coming about in January. There are new things coming out in June. And if you want to keep ahead, then you need to be at both events.
Mm-hmm. The eternal struggle for the Digital Signage Expo people, a focused trade show, is trying to get end users to attend the show,
right,
and therefore walk up to the exhibitors and make them happy that, oh, an end user. You're not really worried about that, are you?
Actually, you know, when we started off, actually, we were not interested in end users at all. We focused very much on getting the channel, and we were extremely successful in doing that. But as the show started to grow and gain traction, more and more of the manufacturers came to us and said, look, we can't just rely on the channel. We want to influence the buyers, the specifiers directly as well. We don't want to alienate the channel, but we need to talk to them because we're in competition. The channel is not exclusive. That means that if someone's coming looking for a digital signage solution for their customer, they don't really care if it's an LG or a Samsung or whatever display. They want to try and sell a solution for that customer. So in that right, most of the manufacturers want to be able to influence as well. So the customer actually says, I want X, Y, or Z. So result was we started to actually do more outbound marketing towards the commercial customers. And we've been very, very successful in achieving this. What we're trying to make ensure is that we maintain the quality. And, you know, this is the most difficult part, excluding people rather than letting everybody in. We could double our attendance overnight very, very easily. But the trouble would be we bring the wrong people.
Right.
So we try to focus very, very clearly on who we're trying to target, how we're getting them. We even put it to, you know, we actually, if you don't have an invitation from an exhibitor or directly from us, you have to pay 150 euros to attend the show. Now, that's not because we want to make money. What we want to make sure is if there's somebody who hasn't been identified as a customer and he really wants to come to the show, that he qualifies himself by paying that amount, rather than saying, oh, this is a cool place, there's lots of fun stuff, let me go in and have a look at it and stay out of the cold.
Right. Yeah, if you open it up, you would have tens of thousands more people just kind of walking through wanting to see the new OLED screens and so on.
Exactly. And that's what we're being very wary to try and avoid.
So in terms of the outbound marketing that you've done for end users, what are you seeing? You're seeing major retailer brands walking through?
Absolutely. And some of this has been very focused. We have hosted buyer programs. So we work with integrated groups or other associations who can actually identify these buyers. And we work with them to actually invite key buyers. And this is the other end of the spectrum. we actually pay their airfare and their hotel to actually attend the show.
Okay.
We have a couple of hundred very focused key buyers who have been identified via the integrators, via manufacturers, or via associations who are brought to the show to attend. We set up programs for them when they come along. So, you know, if someone actually says, well, my focus is to find digital signage solutions, then part of that is they'll get to a couple of seminars or a couple of presentations. They'll have a show floor tour organized for them where they will visit specific digital signage providers. And then they'll also have time for themselves to see anything else they want to look at.
I would imagine that's pretty valuable because you've got 14 halls, and I know from direct experience, you walk in there and you're pretty immediately bewildered by just all the halls, the walkways, and where do I even start?
And, you know, we recognize that too. And as you said in your first opening statement, the maze of the Rye. It's funny, you know, and I suppose that I've been in that building so many times that I know exactly where I'm going. I don't need a map. But, you know, it became very aware to us, those people who've never been there before, or even if they have been there, it's not a structured layout. So we have to do some guidance. We started very late because our initial idea was that we should mix everything up so that people really do see everything. And when you have a small show, it works. The size ISE is at the moment, we found that not everybody has 4 days available to themselves. So we do several things. Firstly, digital signage focused. We have one hall dedicated to digital signage, but we have it in other parts of the show as well. And the other thing we do is we have guides. We have specific guides. So you can pick up a digital signage guide at ISE that shows you the companies who are involved in digital signage, provide solutions, and use that as your way to actually get around the show and find the things you need to look at. And we do that for other sectors as well. We have apps available. We have an app available also to help you manage your visit. So we've put a lot of tools in place. So we recommend to everybody, prepare yourself. You know, before you come to the show, have a look, decide what's important, what you really need to see, and then allocate the time to the other nice to see things. Mm-hmm. And this way you can make your attendance effective. The other thing we also suggest is when you have, and sometimes we have integration companies coming with all their employees. They may come there with about 8 or 10 people. And we recommend don't go around in a crowd, split yourselves up. Decide before on a plan of action to actually say, okay, you guys concentrate on this hall or these sectors, whatever. And then you can come together at the end of the day and decide what you all want to go back or should go back and see.
Mm-hmm. What is new this year? I think it was last year that you went from 3 days to 4 days, or was that?
That's correct. That was last year. And it was, you know, it's something. It's always, for me, it's always difficult doing something new. We want to do new things every time, but it's always something that you have to think very carefully how you manage it. One of the things we saw was that our second day is always too busy, and every show has the last day situation where it's always quieter. But we really had too many people on day 2 and 3. And we had a lot of our exhibitors saying, look, the number of attendees you've got is more than enough, but the distribution is not good. We need to get more people coming later so they have time to deal with it, because, you know, we can't give them the opportunity to grow much. And a lot of them don't want to grow their booths too much. They're saying it's either the only way to deal with this number of people is either give us more time to deal with them or give us the opportunity to take more space and bring more of our own people to deal with them. So, you know, we went for the opportunity to spread the load, which is much more effective. Result was that last year was the first year we did it, and of our 65,000 people, almost 18,000 came on the last day. Now, when you compare it to day 2, which was 30,000, it's a significant difference. But if you compare it to our first show where we only had 3,500, or even our fifth show when we only had 12,000, you know, it's quite significant. What we've noticed with ISE is every time we've done something new, it's taken 2 years for it to really grab. So we anticipate that the last day of ISE 2017 will see a significant increase in attendance.
And in terms of if I've been in the past, what would I see this year that's new and different apart from new exhibitors?
Well, we focused another area, which is we found more and more companies who are providing education technology, so AV solutions for the educational market or training. Mm-hmm. So we moved all those into one area, and that grew again. So we have one hall which is now dedicated to educational technology. So for the schools market, for the universities, mm-hmm. education, et cetera, et cetera. We have the new building, the new hall that has been developed at the Rye, is dedicated to smart building. So again, another focus area. So these are sort of things we've done. So just to tell you now, the education technologies in Hall 13 was previously Hall 12. And the new hall, Hall 9, is where smart building is. So a big focus of smart building. Digital signage, again, is in Hall 8, and that area has grown. So you'll see even more people, more exhibitors in that sector. What else do we have? Samsung, again, has got a dedicated hall to themselves.
Wow.
So they took that for the first time last year. It worked extremely well for them. So they've done that again, and they'll be doing more in that area. That's Hall 4. We are, for the first time, showing immersive AV and immersive technologies. So virtual reality, and that will be at the back of Hall 8 in the park foyer, mm-hmm. the park hall.
There's a fair amount of educational elements to the show as well, right? Just kind of like Infocom?
Absolutely. So again, that's something was quite critical when we started the show, to actually offer training and education. And this has always been, you know, the strong part of the associations, and they've always led the charge on this side, providing certification, providing educational opportunities. We also have show floor theaters that are actually giving out, doing smaller bite-sized presentations. This year, for the first time, both Infocom and Cedia are doing what they call a one-pass-for-all solution. So rather than buying individual education modules, you buy one pass to attend everything.
Okay. And Invitus also does its digital signage summit there, right?
Correct. So we partnered. Invitus has been a partner of ours for quite some years. And they started a digital signage conference in Munich some years ago. And the year before last, we entered into a joint venture with them and we purchased a percentage of that conference. And we run it as a joint venture now. The Munich event has grown, but we do that also in Dubai. And what we're doing is in some of our shows, including Infocom and ISE, is we're doing smaller parts of that summit in those events to address and give information about digital signage. So they'll be doing it again. Everything to do with digital signage at ISE is managed by Invitus for us.
All right. So last question. If I'm coming to ISE for the first time, whether I'm coming from North America or elsewhere, apart from you're saying that people should do a little planning ahead of time to figure out what they want to do, what are some pieces of advice that you'd give them?
Well, firstly, you know, I'd say the planning, making sure that you actually got the time to see what you need to, and arranging your meetings beforehand. Most people are available for spontaneous meetings, are expecting that. But with some of the larger companies, it probably makes sense to actually try and make appointments. There is a fantastic program being run by partners, by exhibitors, etc., throughout Amsterdam over the week. Parties, dinners, lunches, networking events. So ISE has turned into being more than just an exhibition. It's an event now. There's so much more going on around it from Monday until Saturday in and around Amsterdam. So, you know, I would advise enjoy the city. Take a couple of extra days to actually enjoy Amsterdam. I don't live there, but I like the city.
Mm-hmm. Could you even get a hotel at this point?
Yes, you still can. And if you go to the ISE website, so www.iseurope.org, and then you'll see an option in the right at the top where you can actually visit. And within this, you can find a link for hotels. We work exclusively with the Rye Hotel Services. There are a lot of other companies offering opportunities. What I can tell you, our experience has been that when we've had a lot of complaints from exhibitors who have found they've been overcharged on some of those, you know, they're paying premium prices on top of what's normally available. My recommendation, use the Rye Hotel Service. They still have rooms available. It's a safe and secure way to get a room in the city or around the city. Amsterdam has built many, many more hotels now so that you've got more hotel rooms available in the city at reasonable prices. They start from, and unfortunately this one I know is sold out, but directly across the street from the Rise the Motel 1, and their rates start at about 70 euros a night, and it's a very good room for that price. It's clean, it's comfortable, it's basic, but it's very good. And or you can go to the top of the range with the Okura or the Waldorf or the Intercontinental, and there's everything in between. Airbnb works. There are a lot of people who are using that to get private rooms. So there are lots of opportunities to find accommodation to fit your budget.
Airbnb is the way I'm going.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people who use it. I haven't heard of any negatives yet. So, you know, they say if that's what you prefer, then I would recommend you use that as a solution to find your accommodation.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm looking forward to seeing the show in a month, and perhaps we'll meet in person.
I hope so, Dave. We had the opening press conference on Tuesday morning. At press briefing at 9:15, that's where we give out the numbers and tell you, you know, all the highlights we know of. On the Monday, the program starts. We have our smart building conference. We have an opening presentation from Orly Sheeran, who's a renowned architect building phenomenal buildings around the world, who will be doing that in the evening, followed by an opening reception, which is free to attend. And on the last day of ISE, on the Friday, we have Daniel Lamar, who's the CEO of Cirque du Soleil, and he's doing the closing keynote at 9 o'clock in the morning.
All right.
So there's lots there.
Mike, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dave. Look forward to seeing you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.